All right, we'll talk about the elements of evidence, phantom evidence, fraudulent evidence. How do we debate the evidence? Okay, why is evidence important? It separates debate from argument. If somebody says, did not, did two, that's an argument. But if somebody says, did not, and here's why, and here's the facts that happened, now we can have a debate because we have some facts to support. It isn't just me saying it and you saying it. It also mirrors public policy discussions in real life because in real life, and you've already started discovering this by the research you've done for debate cases, you've gone online and you've looked up articles and papers written by scholars and experts. Why do they write those papers? Because they're trying to provide evidence for policies that they support and that politicians can use to try to persuade the decision makers in Congress or in the regulatory system in government or in the courts to be persuaded by the arguments that they've dug up through their research. So that's the purpose why these interest groups and these think tanks and so on, that's why they write these papers. Because they want to generate evidence to support the political views that they're promoting. So that hopefully decision makers will act on those views. But they have to give evidence. They have to show, here's where the billions of dollars are going. Here's where this foreign policy led to, how many people died, how many wars broke out, how many soldiers were recruited, how many were killed. All these facts that are used to then back up the policy that they advocate. All right. Another issue is that debaters themselves are not qualified to make statements of fact. You're not qualified to get up and say, Judge, if we reformed the World Health Organization, 10,000 lives would be saved. That may or may not be true. In fact, it may actually be true, but the fact that you say it is not credible. Not because you're a bad person or you're dishonest, but simply because as a high school student, you are not qualified to make that statement. You don't have the PhD in public health to be able to say, okay, as an expert, I'm telling you that if we reformed WHO, 10,000 lives would be saved. You're not qualified. But if you can quote from Dr. Expert, the director of this public health agency, who says, if we did this, lives would be saved, now we have some credibility and we have some facts in the round. Different forms of debate have different styles or different requirements for evidence. LD debate, they have some evidence, but sometimes it's more quoting from philosophers, but sometimes it can be quoting about facts and so on. They tend to argue more about ideals. In policy debate, we tend to have more facts that must be proven. If you need a fact to be introduced into the round, and by a fact I mean anything that's more complicated than basic truths about the universe, like the earth is round or the sun rises in the east, if it's more complicated than that, you probably are going to need to breed a piece of evidence for it. Because those facts don't become facts inside the round until somebody reads the evidence to support them. Again, there are a few basic things you can say. Okay, if you want to say, you know, the United States is a democracy, I think we'll probably buy into that. But if you want to say President Obama is the president, yeah, okay, I'll buy that. It's pretty much everyone knows that. But if you want to say, and President Obama supports a $20 billion tax increase because of this, that, and the other, whoa, hold on, that's pretty complicated. You better read me a piece of evidence that says that. Now we're getting into numbers, we're getting into details, we're getting into specifics. That's a little too complicated. That's way more than the sun rising in the east. That's very detailed stuff. You better read some evidence for it. I would also point out that evidence is a criterion for speaker points, both AF and NEG. You are graded on how much and how well you use evidence in the debate round. If you want to get decent speaker points and have a shot at winning a speaker award, you better use a fair amount of evidence. Okay, source, elements of evidence. Okay, who said it? The name of the publication and the qualifications. Those are all things you need to have. You may not have to read all of those every time you read a card, but you certainly have to give it the bare minimum, the name of the person and the date. That's the bare minimum you need to read. And I think NCFCA has some rules about that now. They published a standard that says you must read the name and the date for every evidence card. It's been a while since I've seen the rules, but they do have some standards on that. So make sure you find out what the NCFCA rules are and comply with them when you cite evidence. And if it's more than what I'm telling you, then be sure you comply with whatever it is. But you can't just get up and say, well, I have a piece of evidence here, and it says, you know, establishing the World Health Organization reform plan would save 10,000 lives, unquote. Well, who are you quoting? And, you know, all that. So you don't have it. You have to give who you're quoting so we know that you're actually quoting someone. In any case, you got to have all that stuff written down with the evidence so that you can pull it out if you're asked. You got to have a date. Every time you read a piece of evidence in a debate round in policy debate, you need to read a date that goes with it. Do not read one without a date. This is very important. And I think it's in the NCFCA rules or guidelines that you must cite a date. You can double check me on that. There are some things for which the date really isn't that critical to the debate round. If you're citing a moral principle from the Bible, you know, I don't really care when the book of Psalms was written, you know, if it was 3000 or 1000 BC or 1800 BC or whatever, it's probably not going to matter to the debate round. But for most things, the date is very important. And the reason why the date is important is because we're talking about the policy debate is very fact specific and very public policy event driven. Changes happen over time in public policy and in world events, as obviously they do. And so when world events change, conditions change that may change the facts that are the basis for decision making by public policymakers. For example, if you get up and say, read a card that says, well, we got this big crisis in Bosnia and people are dying and so on. Yeah, okay, but that card was written in 1994 when they were having a civil war. If you get up there and try to persuade me that we need to do something in Bosnia today based on a 1994 piece of evidence, I'm sorry, it doesn't persuade me because conditions have changed in the last 20 years. So the date is very important for setting the context of when did these events happen and what are they talking about. Now, some things, again, date is more important or less important. If you read me a card from a Supreme Court decision, we did a card in Blue Book a couple years ago, a 1960 Supreme Court decision where one of the Supreme Court judges said, he was talking about the importance of, I think it was property rights as a foundation of human rights. You know what? If a Supreme Court judge says that in 1960, that's a fundamental teaching about human rights and civil rights. Doesn't really matter if he said that in 1960, that's still going to be valid because it's a foundational human rights issue, and that hasn't changed in the last 50 years. But if he was talking about our policy of having military advisors in Vietnam, you know what? That's changed a lot since the 1960s. So, again, be careful. Just figure out for these kind of things when date is important. I'll give you another example. Years ago, I was judging a debate round in NFL. The round was evenly matched. And it was like almost a tie all the way down. Every time they brought an argument, they had another argument. Affirmative has an argument, negative responds. Boom, boom, boom. There's evidence on both sides. At the end of the round, the round was like really close. And I decided to vote negative. And the reason I voted negative in my reason for decision was the negative team had an inherency card that was 6 months newer than the affirmative's inherency card. And it said that the problem was already on the way to being solved because there'd been this new policy that they'd put in recently. So they beat the affirmative on inherency by a 6 month difference in date. So it really does matter. You can show that public policy changes even in 6 months. You can win the debate round. Okay, the tagline. Here's where we run into a lot of problems. The tagline is that one-sentence summary of what the evidence means, or what you think it means, or what you want it to mean. It's there really for a couple of reasons. One is so that when you're in the middle of your prep time, you can very quickly see what a piece of evidence it can be used for. So you don't have to sit there and read every piece of evidence during prep time. You can just look at the tagline and say, okay, this card says $10 billion trade impact. Okay, no, that's not what I need. Okay, this card says increased risk of war in the Middle East. Yeah, that's the one I want. You don't have to read all the text of the card. And it also gives you an outline of what to say to the judge. You can say, okay, judge, my first disadvantage is going to be increased risk of war in the Middle East. All right? The tagline is not evidence. The tagline is there as a guide for you during prep time and as an outline during speech time so that you can summarize what the card means. But you can't just go read taglines and say, okay, I have a card here that says increased risk of war in the Middle East. Oh, I got another card here that says $1 billion trade impact. Oh, I got another card here that says... You got to actually read the evidence. The tagline doesn't prove anything by itself. Now, train your ears to hear the difference between the tagline and the evidence text. And be careful how you write taglines. Because if you start writing taglines that say millions will die when agriculture collapses, and the card says the price of corn might go up and a few people might be affected, you're going to get in big trouble in debate rounds when you do that. You're going to get caught. And people are going to say, well, he said millions will die, but his evidence says the price might go up. I've seen debaters merge the tagline into the quote text. And so it's unclear where the debater's summary of the card ends and where the quote begins. And so they've got that millions will die, and then it's kind of blended in with what Dr. Expert actually said. We're going to talk about that under evidence ethics, because there's a lot of fraud going on where people do that. They mix in their quotes with what the evidence really said. And then the quotation text, quoted accurately and fairly. I'm going to talk about this in a separate lecture on evidence ethics. So let's hold off on that. There's a whole separate section on that. But I just want to mention that this is important, that we'd use accurate quotations from published sources. And that's important, too. If your mom says something, you can't write it down and cite it as a debate card. It has to be a published source that's accessible to anybody through open media that anybody could get access to. If you have a private email from somebody that you know who's an expert in the field, that doesn't count. I'll tell you a funny story. Years ago, I was talking to an older debate coach who coached in South Texas in the 70s, coached in NFL. He had a student on his team who needed a quote for his debate brief, and he couldn't find it. He researched everywhere, and he couldn't find the quote. There's no internet back then. But he had researched, read everywhere, every publication he could find. He couldn't find the exact words that he needed for his case. So he wrote to his congressman, Representative Gonzalez, and he said, "Representative Gonzalez, I wonder if you could read the following into the congressional record." And he wrote out a statement of his beliefs about something, and he sent it to his representative. And Gonzalez said, "Sure, I'll be happy to." So Gonzalez read it into the congressional record, and then he said, "Okay, according to congressional record on this date, 1979, boom, 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 boom," said Representative Gonzalez. And he had the quote he needed from his congressman. And it was in a published source. So there you go. I don't recommend that, but it's been done. All right, let's talk about phantom evidence. Okay, phantom evidence is something we don't want to see. And in fact, you won't see it because it's a phantom. But we don't even want to hear about it. We don't even want to think about it. Phantom evidence. Basic concept, evidence that's not introduced in the round doesn't exist. If you start talking about a piece of evidence, but you haven't read it into the round, then it's a phantom. And as far as my judging philosophy and the way that debate has classically operated over the years, if the card is not read into the round, then it never existed, it doesn't exist, and it can have no impact on the round. You may have 100 pieces of evidence over on your table that all say, if we reform the World Health Organization, it's going to cause bubonic plague and cancer is going to go up by 30% and a million people will die. But if none of those cards are read into the round, then those problems don't exist. Those facts don't exist until they are, one of those cards is read into the round. You actually have to get up and read it. This is a new debate round. The slate is wiped clean. The judge comes in with no preconceived ideas. He pretends like he's never heard of this before. You have to persuade him. So you must read that evidence to him as if it was for the first time. So we don't want to use phantom evidence. And if somebody else is using it, we want to call them out on it. All right, examples. "Well, I have a piece of evidence here that says it would cost $2 trillion to do the affirmative plan, but I don't have time to read it right now, so I'm going to move on." Well, I'm sorry. If you don't have time to read it, then I don't have time to listen to your theories about it. I don't believe you. Okay, you're not persuading me. For one thing, is this very persuasive? No. But these are all examples of statements that I've heard in debate rounds when I'm judging. I didn't make this up. I've heard this before. Yes. No. No, I'm going to come take candy away from you. No, you can't do that. No, you're not allowed to do that. Because again, how do I know that you're summarizing it accurately? Until I've heard the actual quote, I don't know what that evidence says. You can read exact quotes from the evidence, but you can't just say, "Well, I've got evidence here. I don't have time to read it, so I'm going to just tell you what I think it means." No. That's a phantom. Okay. All right. So I've heard all of these. I had some evidence for this, but I left it over on the desk. Okay. Well, I'm sorry you left it on the desk, but you know, if you don't read it in the round, it doesn't count. "Well, I built my own fuel cell last week, and so let me tell you how it works." Well, that's cool that you shot a rocket in your backyard. You built a fuel cell. That's nice, but that's not evidence. What you did personally or your personal activities are not evidence in a debate round. It's not a published source that we can refer to. So you can't cite that. Oh, how about this one? "Did you know Peru has the most abundant iron supply in the world? Did you also know that Peru has the most successful ocean farming business in the world?" No, I didn't, and I still don't. Because the fact that you ask me these questions doesn't prove that Peru has anything. These are just assertions, they're not facts in a debate round. I don't know if that stuff's true or not, just because some debater gets up there and asks me these questions. I don't know. I don't know what Peru has. You prove it to me, it's your job. All right, how about these? These are things I put down for what I think affects credibility. Qualification of the source, the date, warrants for the claim. Does he assert it on his own, or does he explain why it's true, or does he back it up with studies and research? How about believability and reasonability? Sometimes people just, even somebody who may have a decent qualification, although it's fairly rare, they might just kind of say, "Well, you know, if we change UN peacekeeping, then world peace would break out next week." Really? All problems in the world would just go away next week if we just did this peacekeeping reform? Really? Is that credible? I mean, is that really possible? So some things are just outlandish that people come up with. So, I mean, typically the more education somebody has, the more research they've done, and the more papers they've published, They tend not to make statements like that because they don't want to lose their credibility, so they don't lose their research grants and their, you know, professorships and everything else. So really qualified people typically don't say outlandish things like that. And when somebody does say something like that, it's kind of a tip-off that maybe they're not very well qualified, and you ought to go dig up the dirt on who they are and where they're coming up with this kind of stuff. I mean, real world. You know, in the debate world, lots of people read cards and say lots of things, but if that just sounds real world impossible, then go dig up who this guy is and why he's saying that. And maybe they're misquoting him. You know, maybe they fabricated that piece of evidence. Maybe it's out of context. Maybe this guy doesn't really have a PhD. Maybe he's just Susie's fourth grade website says that. All right, how about this one? DHS is stepping up deportations. No date, no author, no nothing. Okay, it's not correctly cited. Okay, let's try this one. Administration fails to support deportation efforts. Yep, this is way too old to be used in the debate round to talk about. Okay, additional tips. Listen to make notes on sources cited by the other team and research the sources after the round. You would not believe how many times I have helped out my club that I was coaching or I've been debating and have beaten other teams based on listening carefully to the source they're citing and then go look up the article they cited and find out what else this guy said, find out who was funding his research, find out what other people say about this guy, if they say he doesn't know what he's talking about or he did all his research wrong. Take notes on their sources. If you didn't catch them when you were flowing, ask for their evidence and make a note. If they have some big killer piece of evidence that says this is going to save 1 million lives, write down the name and the date and go look it up on your own later. And you wouldn't believe the stuff you can turn up when you do that. I'll give you, while Sarah's writing, I'll tell you another funny story. Another well-known source book a couple years ago, Environmental Year, published a quote, a plant advocacy quote from a guy named Strahan. And it was published in a well-known journal. So it was an honest mistake on their part, I think, but they should have gone the extra mile and studied who this guy was, which I did as I was researching the negative brief. And it's very easy to find information about him. It turns out the guy, it was published in like this university publication, and it was about saving the whales, was what the case was about. You guys know about that? Yeah. Okay. And the advocate for the case was a guy named Strahan. It turns out, and this was in, they posted in the source book, and they didn't bother to go look up who this guy was. I went and looked up who he was, because there's some articles published about him, because he's quite a character. Turns out he's a homeless bum on the streets of Boston who stands around screaming at people, begging for money, and yelling about the whales. And since he's unemployed, he has plenty of time to go into the federal courthouse in Boston and file his own lawsuits with his paper and pencil. He writes out lawsuits and submits them to sue people and enforce the Endangered Species Act for anybody that he thinks is harming whales in Boston Harbor. He loses all his lawsuits because he's not a lawyer, he's not anything, he's just a homeless bum, but he really cares passionately about the whales. So he submits lawsuits that he writes himself, one after the other, spends all day writing his lawsuits. And he was the expert that they were citing as their big-time expert on how we can save the whales. So be careful. You can really, if you don't look up who these people are. He also, his big persuasive argument that he made one time in a federal court case that he was involved in, he actually stood in court and argued to the federal judge in court. He said, Your Honor, he said, in a previous lifetime, I was the Supreme Court judge who wrote the precedent for this case. And so, therefore, I'm better qualified to interpret the meaning of this law than you are. Let me explain to you how this should work. And he tried to tell the federal judge that what the correct interpretation of the law was. So anyway, that's the kind of weirdness that's out there. And it shows up in debate rounds. That particular source book had two different cases where the advocate was a homeless bum. That was one of them. The other one was the bottle bill case. They quoted a homeless bum as their advocate for why we should have a federal bottle deposit law. If you buy that, good for you. You won't find that in Blue Book.